This podcast is produced by the St. Louis Psychoanalytic Institute, educating professionals and helping people of all ages and circumstances to understand their lives. Visit us at stlpi.org to learn more.
I was amazed and entertained when I saw this film. I resonated with it and I played it over in my mind. If I could only say one thing about it, I would quote Fergus when Peter the Terrorist asks him what Dill is like between the sheets. He says, definitely unusual. And this is certainly a one-of-a-kind film. For one thing, the hero discovers that his about-to-be lover is really a man, while his former lover carries a monster gun and doesn't have a drop of mercy. And yet, in this distinctly strange mix, he finds a lot for which he can feel both love and gratitude. For another thing, it centers on a sexual illusion, which confuses the instincts and the emotions. Now, some of you knew right from the start that Dill was not what she seemed to be. My sister's friend knew from the size of Dill's hands, but I was completely taken in by Dill's womanly beauty the first time as well as tonight. What can I say? My sister admits that she was fooled too. And while that may be a family problem, I think a lot of you were also fooled. I was intrigued when I first heard it reviewed on the radio. The reviewer said that it contained a secret so special that he would have to talk around it. And I found that very compelling, had to see it. And actually, there are comparable, although perhaps less stunning surprises, in two other major Neil Jordan screenplays, Mona Lisa, 1986, and The Miracle, 1989. Like The Crying Game, Mona Lisa is also the story of a hardened man whose love for an unlikely woman leads him into some very strange territory. And it too involves a sexual zigzag that derails the romantic ending that we might have expected. And in Jordan's 1989 film, The Miracle, a young man's passionate attraction leads to a revelation that stands the entire situation on its head. Neil Jordan is working on a theme. A man desires an alluring and mysterious woman. The woman is sphinx-like in that she knows some vital truth about the situation which the man has to discover for himself. The paradox lies in the fact that the truth which the man eventually discovers is the very thing that stands in the way of their union. However, the obstacle that blocks the fleshy coming together of a man and a woman leads to an equally satisfying outcome for Jordan's characters. In finding out how come they can't have what they wanted, they come away with a deeper appreciation of life's other possibilities and a deeper knowledge of themselves. It may be that this is most true in The Crying Game, where the alluring woman turns out to be a man. I thought the film springs to life when Jody flings himself screaming onto Jude. I mean, that startled me more than Dill's body. And I thought that moment of justified outrage penetrates Fergus's terrorist crust and opens him up to Jody's charm and insight, and perhaps to Jody's seduction of him. You can imagine that no one in that terrorist cell has ever said anything warming or playful to Fergus. I mean, the details of keeping a hostage, the everyday details, would have to be unbelievably boring. So what good terrorist could afford to have a good sense of humor? But Fergus begins to warm when Jody tells him that he's no pinup. And of course, they finally have that hilarious dialogue over who had the greatest pleasure when Fergus had to hold Jody's penis. And certainly, there's an erotic current between the two men. But I think they're also reacting, of course, to the total absurdity of the situation. And you know how crazy situations can create hilarity. I think Jody goes to the heart of the situation in the scorpion fable. The scorpion is the very model of perversity, the person who bites the hand that feeds. The fable illustrates that the scorpion person seduces by making his victim forget what he already knows and ought to keep in mind. However, Jody reminds Fergus that he's not one of them, he's kind. Against the background of their mad situation, these words have a very powerful effect on Fergus. They weaken his bonds to his terrorist gang, and they make room for his good qualities to grow. Well, what do you make of Jody's request to Fergus that he look Dill up? I think it's a small triumph in a situation in which he can do so little else. And for spice, and to stimulate Fergus's curiosity, he tells him that she would not suit him. Now, just as Jody sets Fergus up for a surprise, the film upsets our confidence that we know what's what, up from down, boy from girl. However, it's my thought that the naked truth about Dill is a fitting element in a very coherent story. After all, Fergus has been part of Jody's murder, so it's exquisitely appropriate that he should be confronted with a prohibiting penis at the very instant he expects to make love to the man's mate. Talk about revenge from the grave. Now, in a way, the moment speaks for itself. A human being can tolerate only so much dissonance between his expectations and his actual perceptions. Up until that instant, everything about Dill says she's a woman. She looks and excites like a woman, and if we could taste and smell her, she would probably taste and smell like a woman. So that a penis in place of a vagina is enough to make a person dizzy or to throw up. Dill's nudity also touches on a fairly common male nightmare, namely that the woman with whom he's about to make love is really a man. Although I recognize that for some, this would be a dream come true. On a deeper level of the unconscious, where the reality principle does not apply, and where the fantastic reigns, and where the distinction between a thing and its opposite remains indefinite, the fear is of encountering a woman with a penis. On this very primitive, inmost level of the unconscious, each sexual encounter with a woman leaves a man open to the risk of coming face to face with his worst nightmare. Therefore, it's good to know your partner. An indication of the pervasiveness of this anxiety is the stories told by young adolescent boys, always sworn to be true, about the guy who discovers that the gorgeous young woman whom he had taken home is really another guy in drag. The Funky Comedina by the group Tone Lock a few years ago told such a story. I tried to get it at Streetside. I wanted to tell you the lyrics. It was unavailable, but as I think about it, the lyrics are so grody that you're better off without them. The height of shame for the heterosexual man would be to follow the example of Renee Gallimard, who, in M. Butterfly, carries on a love affair with a female impersonator, even going so far as to permit himself the delusion that they have together created a child. No man wishes to be Monsieur Gallimard. However, tonight's film, in contrast to M. Butterfly, in which Gallimard denies what he must really know, leads to a wonderful outcome. And what is that outcome? I feel it's the intermingling of two human hearts, in this case, of two men. That's what makes The Crying Game so charming. Fergus and Dill achieve the kind of connection with one another which we should all be delighted to have. They please, encourage, and tolerate one another. And Fergus has to smile in spite of himself. And even after he knows the truth, there are two further scenes in which he kisses Dill. As a friend of mine put it, it's pure love. One thing about their relationship stands out. It's that they enjoy and share in the bittersweet irony of their situation. For instance, when Fergus reminds Dill that she isn't a girl, as you all remember, Dill replies, "Details, baby, details." Dill suggests that Fergus can always pretend and then asks if he's doing it. Fergus responds with equal irony, "I'm working on it." I think it's the delicious irony of this film that a straight man is drawn into a romantic triangle with two gay men. You gotta love it. It's unique. It's a never-before-conceived, Oedipal romantic relationship. Fergus not only relates to Jody and Dill as individuals, but to the two of them as a couple. Jody is there in memory for each of them, individually, and ultimately he's a common memory which enriches their relationship. In a way, Fergus obtains from his relationship to Jody and Dill as a couple what the child should obtain from its parents. Under good circumstances, the child internalizes its parents' love for each other, imbued with the deeply felt sense that he or she is the product of that love, and identified with his parents in their love for each other. The child is able to give and receive love throughout his life. I think it's this greater capacity for love that Fergus obtains from his complex relationship with Jody and Dill. For example, his going to prison in place of Dill shows his wish to preserve the object of his love, and furthermore, involuntarily making himself a prisoner, he makes symbolic reparation to Jody, whom he has murdered. Indeed, his retelling of the scorpion parable at the close of the film rounds out his bond with Jody and shows that good aspects of Jody's personality have made their way into Fergus's personality. Now, this film, in which a cross-dresser's illusion is so important, stimulated me to think about the way in which people convey how they think about their gender and sexual identity. It led me to this book of photos by Nan Golden. In her introduction to her thought-provoking collection of photographs of queens, transvestites, and transsexuals, entitled, appropriately enough, The Other Side, Nan Golden says, "Most people get scared when they can't categorize others by race, by age, and most of all, by gender. I can only agree that it can be unnerving not to be able to tell a person's sex, but I regard that as perfectly understandable. One of the cornerstones of our conviction that we're in touch with reality is our ability to tell male from female, which is fundamental as the distinction between mother and father and between oneself and that of the opposite sex. It can't help but make us feel blurred and momentarily anxious about our own identities when we're unable to discriminate that of another person. However, with the right touch, our inability to distinguish another person's sex can be the basis of good comedy. There is, for instance, the Saturday Night Live sketch, Here Comes Pat, which is about the kind of androgynous person we meet whose sex we can only guess at." Is that still on the air? I hope so. Good. "I especially like another Saturday Night Live sketch called The Effeminate Heterosexual, in which Dana Carvey's character is assumed to be gay solely on the basis of his mannerisms. But perhaps I'll save that for another time. In an effort to convey the particular concept of womanliness to which they aspire, some, not all, some of Nan Golden's male subjects look to me as if they are attempting to match the oppressively sexy look of models in Victoria's Secret." It just comes in the mail. But I think her subjects and those models are both prisoners to their poses. They're both unreal. If they were brought to life, neither Nan Golden's more strained photographic subjects nor the overly done female models in Victoria's Secret look as if they could do an ordinary human thing. Neither conveys a feeling of genuinely womanliness, and I think that's because they both lack peopleness. Ah, but in contrast, our Dill possesses physical and personal qualities which give her depth and reality. She's complex, she can get down and dirty, and she has a droll sense of humor. We can all identify with her desire that Fergus care for her. Her statement, "And even when you were throwing up, I could tell you cared," it's the quintessence of hopefulness. I think the scene in which Dill points a gun at Fergus was very moving. She asks if he likes her, and when he says that he does, what does she ask for more endearments? Who hasn't wanted more endearments? She lays the gun down when he says that he would do anything for her. She's just like the rest of us in wanting to be dear to someone whom she loves, or at least to hear the words of love. Happily, she knows the difference between the truth and a coerced response. Having heard the words, she achieves the dignity of at least being able to declare that she knows the difference. "I know you're lying, Jimmy, but it's nice to hear it." Dill's portrait of womanliness breaks down in the scene in which she blasts Jude. Not that I think it's unwomanly to shoot somebody to death in self-defense. Rather, Dill's concentration on Jude's use of her ass and tits to get Jody reveals Dill's envy and hatred of the femaleness which he emulates. Just a few more comments. Neil Jordan has said of his stories, "The experiences that are dangerous, frightening, terrifying, and maybe in some ways unsavory, are often the ones that broaden your emotional resonance, your understanding of things. I believe this film has deepened our appreciation of things. In particular, at one point, the bartender asks, "Who knows the secrets of the human heart?" I think The Crying Game reveals one of them, which is that there are some situations in which it is easy to love, and some in which it requires a great act of personal freedom and much courage.